If you've been enjoying this podcast and want a super easy way to support it, you can simply find me on YouTube by searching Demon Creep. A subscription is a great help. But if you want to help the longevity of this podcast, my channel offers channel memberships for as low as 99 cents a month. Thank you, and keep enjoying the Demon Creep podcast. Hello, souls and demons, and welcome back to the portal. Today I have a bit of a classic story for you. This one is called The Grotesque, with an unknown author. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. I got the bulk of this story from an online journal. I should clarify that it isn't mine, so there may be elements that could benefit from some sober and rational explanation, and won't always be able to offer that. My name is Jason, but my friends call me Jace. The journal in question belonged to a friend of mine, or rather, someone that used to be a friend of mine. It was on a public journalism website, which many of you will know of. Perhaps you're even a member yourself. I'd forgotten all about it, to tell you the truth. I'd long grown out of blogging my every thought, feeling minor achievement and perceived injustice in the world, with the faint hope that the throngs of the internet would find me fascinating. I'd never deleted my account forever, and with a little thought I was able to recall my password and log in. After a quick browse through my old entries, rolling my eyes, chuckling, and thanking Christ I wasn't that ranting teenager anymore, I decided to check on the journals of a few of my old friends. Most were inactive accounts, or had simply not been updated in years. But then, as my gaze skimmed along the list of abstract, comical, and melodramatic blogger names, my eye fixed on one which caused my blood to chill in my veins, and a tumult of painful memories to flood my mind, shattering the pleasant nostalgia. Patrickster 87. Oh my god, Patrick. Pat, who I'd attended college with, gone on lads' holidays with, and years before, been tight teenage friends. Pat had grown up in the same smallish town as me. Our parents knew each other, we'd shared a lot over the years. He'd been like a brother to me, and I to him. We'd have always promised to be there for each other, if saying something like that hadn't been suicide for the masculinity. But I'd always felt it was an unspoken understanding. Thinking back to our time at college, we worked well together. I was what you might call sensible, a little reserved, but also more level-headed than Pat. I tended to be the one with a job and a handle on our plans for the weekend. He was just all about living life, really outgoing but not obnoxious with it. The kind of guy always at the center of the fun, but still pretty intelligent. He joked that he was studying history of literature and weed. He was usually in a group of people he was making laugh by acting the clown. You know the kind of guy. He had a lot of friends. Guy friends and girlfriends, oh yeah. And the girlfriends. He was in and out of relationships more times than I could remember. There was generally a minimal drama, but some of the relationships barely reaching a full week. He insisted to me that he always ended things with a genuine, "Let's still be friends, yeah?" But the girls rarely took him up on his offer. One night when we were just chilling in his dorm room, doing a little smoking and perhaps more than a little drinking, he confided to me his sincere desire to find the right girl and settle down. I snorted my disbelief and said, yeah, I'm sure. Glancing over at his door where a petite brunette in a very short denim skirt and almost see-through t-shirt had exited a few hours ago when I arrived. But he sat up and continued, "No, seriously, man. I know there's been a lot of girls." He grinned at this point and glanced at his phone out of the corner of his eye, clearly expecting a text from another girl at some point that night. "But it's just because I'm a passionate person, you know? If I meet a girl I like, I want her to be my girlfriend, right there, right now. If it doesn't work out, I'll worry about that later. Cross that bridge when we come to it, you know?" He took another drink. "Seriously, though. If I met the right kind of girl, all bets would be off. That would be me sorting it all out. No more messing around, no more cheating. Gotta make a real go of it, you know? Treat her like a princess with respect. That's what love is, man. Yeah, I know, I said, considering his words. I just want to ask you one thing. Sure. Shoot. When the fuck did you start reading Cosmo magazine? I grinned broadly, still slouching on his couch. I raised my arm a little too slowly to deflect the empty beer can thrown at my head. We both laughed. Thinking about those days gives me a strange feeling in my chest. A sort of tight numbness where my ribs feel constricted, but my heart beats stronger than ever. It's bittersweet. Remember my old friend and the time before. Before everything just went crazy. Looking at his online journal, I see that it is set to private. Viewable only by his friends. To my knowledge, that means me, and maybe only one or two or three people. I scroll through the entries until I see a significant date gap. One entry titled something about summer break dating from somewhere in the middle of high school. It has a gap after it of nearly 6 years, and is followed by an entry titled simply, Day 1, Sunday. I have read the story I'm about to share with you, possibly 100 times over. It doesn't get any easier, but to make the situation clearer to you, I will include my own notes between some of the entries, to provide context and later on, a connection to reality. None of the entries had any comments, seemingly never being read after publishing, as if Pat was just posting his desperate story into the void. Day 1, Sunday. Dear Diary. This feels kind of weird. I haven't been on here in so long, not since I was a teenager. Well, where to begin catching you up? I'm a 20-something, 150-pound-something, good-looking college struggler. Hey, thank you. It was recommended to me by Dr. Chen that I keep a journal and update it with how I'm feeling day to day. I guess starting on a Sunday seems a bit odd. But this might be an odd journal. Anyway, I got into some trouble recently. Apparently I have issues with authority figures and anger management. Yeah, another way to say that is I don't take any bullshit from anybody. I guess I can overreact sometimes, though. I'm working on it. The trouble Pat refers to in this entry is nearly being kicked out of college for smoking weed. We had a fairly sympathetic staff on our campus, but you still couldn't wander around blatantly smoking in broad daylight. Needless to say, there was a confrontation, Pat didn't react well, and there was a rumor that things got violent. It should have resulted in immediate expulsion, removal from campus, and possible jail time. But Pat managed to sweet-talk his way out of that, explaining that he was struggling with the stress of college work and some personal problems, and instead was referred to mandatory counseling. We high-fived about it back then. Day 2, Monday. Hey again. Well, this is day 2 on my path of self-discovery and whatever. I had my second session with Dr. Chen today. She's my counselor, kind of a weird Chinese hippie chick. I think she's in her 50s. She's really small. I feel so tall when I'm in a room with her. Anyway, she's really nice. Encourages me to talk about my feelings. It's still weird. I know I can be a bit impatient, and sometimes I just flip out if people push me too far. But Dr. Chen doesn't seem to think that it's a problem. She says I need to let the anger out. It's strange. She talks about it like it were alive, like an animal or something, in a cage. In captivity, your anger will writhe and coil, fighting against its bonds, forever seeking release and liberty. There is no good that can come from strangulating it. It is no noble act to deny its freedom. Maybe it will start to make more sense after a few more sessions. Whatever. Don't have time to write more. I have plans tonight. It's gonna get crazy. I never met Dr. Chen, and Pat never much talked about his sessions. His appointments were off campus, and as he had his own car, there was never a need to give him a lift, and in doing so, scope out where he was going. All in all, none of his friends seemed to pay it much thought. The plans he mentioned were a party at a friend of ours' house. I don't remember much about it. We all got pretty wasted. I do know we both hooked up with some girls that night. For me, it didn't go any further than the next morning, but for Pat, it was different. Day 5, Thursday. Hey, sorry I haven't updated in a couple of days. I haven't been home. I met this girl the other night at this party. I was crazy drunk. She is awesome, though. We've just been hanging out at her apartment. She isn't at any of the local colleges. I was surprised because the party was mostly college students. It's cool, though, as it means none of my friends know her, and so they can't start talking about us. I've had probably more girlfriends than is really okay. I'm not a totally asshole or anything, but I just find it hard to settle, I guess. But Nicole, that's her name, is great. Amazing, actually. She works in a coffee shop in town. She had to go in yesterday, but instead of going home, I just went in with her and watched her serve customers all day. She's tall, but not too tall. Slim and sort of tan, but not in a fake way. She has long, dark brown hair that feels like cool liquid to run your fingers through. And she has the most beautiful face with big, hazel eyes. Part of me wants to take her out just to show her off to everyone. But another part of me wants to hide her away from the world so I don't have to share her. Let me just say this about that. I'd say the second part of his mind won over in the end because we, myself and the rest of Pat's friends, never got to meet Nicole more than once. From that day on, we all began seeing less and less of Pat. He was always at his new girlfriend's house or at his appointments. Dozing through class or on the rare occasion he was in his dorm, he was unconscious, sleeping the sleep of the dead. Day 6, Friday. See? I'm doing my best to update daily like Dr. Chen said. She didn't seem pissed that I missed a few appointments. That's good because I was kind of worried I'd be in some kind of trouble. She just seemed interested to hear about Nicole. I must have talked about her for nearly the whole session. I had to stop myself a couple of times because I started talking kind of fast. I feel pumped, full of adrenaline. I told her that Nicole wears a braided bracelet around her ankle, just like the ones Dr. Chen has on her tiny wrists. She smiled and said they are good luck or something. More encouragement to update the journal. Will do. Am doing, see? Day 7, Saturday. Called Nicole today. She said she was in work and couldn't talk, no problem. I went to the coffee shop and waited for her lunch break. We drank coffee and talked. She really is great. We have the same taste in music and movies, and most things. I felt ready to tell her about my appointments with Dr. Chen, reassuring her I'm not dangerous or anything, I just did a stupid thing. She was so understanding, I felt like a huge weight was lifted off my shoulders, when she smiled her beautiful smile at me and said she looked for a counselor herself, after a car accident a couple of years ago, and thinks counseling is really helpful, but that she's never heard of Dr. Chen. Turns out she's into some alternative therapies too. Whatever, it's cool. Day 6, Sunday. Spent the day with Nicole. Was supposed to work on a college assignment, whatever. Nicole is more important to me right now. We shared a lot. I explained a bit about my frustration issues and some of the angry outbursts. She seemed cool with it. She's so awesome. She gave me a little clay creature thing. I called it a gargoyle, and she said it is actually called a grotesque. It is an ugly little bastard, but she says it will protect me if I keep it in my dorm room. She has one too, a pale, goblin-looking thing, made out of cool white stone. It is much creepier. I'm planning to tell Dr. Chen about it. I reckon it will be right up her street. The hairs on my arms and neck stood up as waves of goose pimples ran across my body when I read this light and cheerful entry. In the really bad days at the end, I remember Pat mumbling to himself about the grotesque. Just the word itself still sends a shudder down my spine. Day 7, Monday. Dr. Chen totally approves of the grotesque. She recommended I keep it in my room, and that I talk to it, telling it my worries and what is making me angry. I think it is to give me something to vent at when I'm not calm enough to write in this journal. It sounded pretty hippy-dippy. But when Nicole texted me earlier this evening to say she wasn't feeling well and didn't want to hang out tonight, I talked to the little clay creature about how that upset me, and afterwards I felt oddly better. I wonder if Nicole talks to hers, too. Day 8, Tuesday. Nicole wasn't feeling well today. Reckons it is the start of flu or something, and didn't meet me for lunch. I decided to go over to her apartment and bring her some food and flu remedies from the pharmacy. I don't mind, just getting to see her is enough for me. In the supermarket, I took much longer than I normally would, agonizing over which juice she might prefer and what would be the best soup to bring her. It felt so important to get everything perfect, because she is perfect. When I got to her building, I almost sprinted up the stairs to her fourth floor apartment. I had butterflies in my stomach waiting at the door. She answered wearing a dressing gown, her eyes looking a little watery and her nose was chapped a little red from tissues, but she still looked amazing. She said she didn't want to kiss me in case I caught her flu. I didn't care if I caught it. I'd catch plague for her. We watched TV and talked all afternoon into the evening. I asked her if she talks to her grotesque. She does. Day 9, Wednesday. Nicole wanted to spend the day in bed recovering from the flu. I spent the day with Jace and our friends Kenny and Chris. Went to game store, secondhand record store, talked a bit. Wonder when Nicole will be feeling better again. I texted her a couple of times and only got one reply. Hope she's okay. It might not sound like much, but that was the first day in what seemed like ages that I was able to convince Pat to come out with us for more than an hour or so. He didn't talk much, and we all found that strange. He was never normally so quiet, and although he seemed alive with energy, so much so it seemed as though his body twitched with the effort to contain it. Nothing seemed to interest him for more than a couple of seconds. It was like he just didn't care, that there was something preying on his mind driving him to distraction. We were all worried and told him so, but he shrugged it off. Day 10, Thursday. Nicole is feeling better. I went round early and we had breakfast together. I offered to cancel my appointment with Dr. Chen this afternoon so we could spend more time together, but she said she needed to go into work after taking those days off sick. This kind of annoyed me. I'm willing to make sacrifices in my life to put her first, but she doesn't seem willing to do the same. I went to my session. Today, Dr. Chen talked about releasing rage. She said anger was like a poison and it was better out than in. She explained that people have a misguided view and that controlling your anger means you are disciplined. But in actual fact, people who can find the focus of their rage and direct it accurately can channel untapped power beyond anything they've ever done. It's when anger spills out all over the place that things get messy. That makes sense to me. I had to admit that this is not what I expected from counseling. Day 11/12, Friday night, Saturday. I'm not really in the mood to write an update. Went out tonight with Nicole to a party. Was excited to introduce her to my friends. Everything was fine at first. Jason didn't seem impressed. I thought he'd be supportive of my new relationship. I'm really happy with Nicole. Everyone else thought she was great, of course. In fact, I think a few guys were a little too friendly with her. In fact, I'm sure they were trying to flirt with her. Was she flirting back? I don't know. I had to leave before Jason could notice and rub it in my face. He's just jealous because I found the perfect girl. He'll try to pick it apart. He made fun of me when I told him I felt something really special for Nicole. I can't give him a chance to prove he was right for not taking me seriously. I love Nicole. I honestly have no idea where he got the idea that I would try to pick his relationship apart. I was happy for Pat. A little concerned for him, sure, but Nicole seemed really nice and I was pleased for them both. He had seemed on edge that night. Didn't drink much, didn't socialize much. Nicole was being friendly, chatting to a bunch of us, guys and girls. I didn't notice her flirt with anyone. But at around midnight, he pulled her to one side. I heard them having a hushed but agitated conversation and they abruptly left. It hurts me imagining Pat saw me as someone who would resent his newfound happiness. That must have been why he was so resistant to the help I tried to offer him later on. Day 13, Sunday. Feel shitty. Last entry was in the early hours of day 12 after that party. Waste of time. My friends are all idiots. I fell asleep as afternoon was approaching and slept the day away at Nicole's apartment. It is so wonderful being in bed next to her. She was a bit upset that I'd wanted to leave the party early the other night, but I explained that I just wasn't comfortable and she accepted it. She's so understanding. I felt immediately better once we were alone. We lay in bed as we normally do, with me spooning her soft, slim frame, one arm draped around her waist, holding her hand tightly. I feel so safe there, so calm. Day 14, Monday. Met Jason at class today. He didn't meet my eye. I suddenly felt a stab of guilt for being such a jerk to him the other night. I apologized. He said it was cool. I didn't explain everything to him, though, just in case. I had another appointment with Dr. Chen this afternoon. She asked me if I was acting on my anger, but acting appropriately. I said I thought so. She said I must offer kindness to those who deserve it, instead of wasting love on ingrates. When walked in open territory, bother no one. If someone bothers me, ask him to stop. If he does not stop, destroy him. Kind of strange advice. It kind of makes sense, though. Day 15, Tuesday. I can't stand living in the dorms anymore. The constant noise of other people's music, their footsteps, muffled conversation reverberating through the walls, it's driving me crazy. I can't switch off anymore, there's no silence. No peace to be had anywhere in these buildings. I've been talking to my grotesque. I've named him Chen after Dr. Chen. And it really seems to help to have a face to vent to, even if it is an ugly one. I think I'm going to ask Nicole if I can stay with her for a while. Day 16, Wednesday. I stayed last night with Nicole. It was great. I feel so comfortable around her. I feel like there's this wire coil wound tightly in my chest all the time. But when I'm with her, it unwinds and I can relax. I didn't bring little Chen with me. He's still on the shelf in my dorm room. I've heard Nicole whispering to her little goblin creature sometimes. It is pretty cute. The whispering, not the grotesque. Unlike the one she gave me, which looks like a cartoon gnome, hers is truly hideous. Actually quite scary despite its tiny size. It has this wide, flat head and lantern jaw, bristling with what looks like a row of shark's teeth. Its body is gaunt and elongated, arched into an awkward crouch. It has no nose and all of its skin is smooth and white. Wait, what am I talking about, skin? I mean, what it is made of is entirely white. Apart from its eyes, they are small and beady and totally black. I don't know how she can take comfort from that, but she seems to tell it everything. We didn't see Pat for several days from this point on. I will just paste his entries as I read them, as there is no further explanation of the next few days that I can offer. And for that I apologize. Day 17, Thursday. I got a text from my friend Jessica this morning. Nicole saw it on my phone and asked who Jessica was. No, not asked, demanded. I explained Jessica was just a friend wanting to know how I was because I'd been missing a few classes recently. I don't know if Nicole believed me or not. I'm hurt, genuinely. I don't know why she would mistrust me. Haven't I given her every single reason to have faith in my feelings for her? I talked to Dr. Chen about it at my session this afternoon. She says being quick to suspicion can be a sign of a guilty conscience. Could Nicole have something to hide? Day 18, Friday. I'm positive now. Nicole isn't being entirely honest with me. I don't even know if she shares my feelings. She has been less and less talkative, sort of irritable. I asked her if it was her time of the month, and she told me not to be so fucking sexist. I don't know what her problem is. She's been talking to her grotesque again and texting on her phone a lot. She gives me a dirty look when I look at my phone. I think she might be cheating on me. I walked into her living room earlier this evening and she closed the windows on her laptop really quickly. She's hiding something. Day 19, Saturday. Had to go to a catch-up class today because I've been missing so many lectures. I woke up this morning feeling heavy. I didn't sleep well. My dreams are chaotic. A lunatic showreel of discordant sounds and images. I seem to expel more energy asleep than awake. Regardless, I still had to drag my sorry ass into class this afternoon. Nicole went to work. She hardly said goodbye this morning. I'm sure she's cheating on me, but maybe with her manager at work? I don't know. But I know she's hiding something from me. Class today was pointless. I didn't absorb anything. I couldn't focus my mind. Is it any wonder? I could hardly hear the lecture over the sounds of people breathing, whispering, the scratching of pens against paper, the rattling click of keyboards, the humming of the heating system, footsteps in the halls outside of the classroom, the shuffling of bodies in their seats, their clothes rustling, people clearing their throats, sighing. I swear I could practically hear their hearts beating. My head hurts. Walking back to Nicole's apartment in the early evening, I felt like the shadows lengthened faster than normal for this time of year, as if they were reaching out to touch me as I hurried along the quiet streets. I didn't see anyone around, but I felt watched. I'm starting to wish she lived nearer to the college, or at least a busier side of town. She still isn't home. She should have finished work over an hour ago. What is she up to? Day 20, Sunday. I'm at the end of my chain with Nicole. When I confronted her last night about where she had been for hours after her work had finished, she just brushed my question aside as if it didn't matter. When I pushed the issue, she snapped at me. Said she'd gone to a bar called Catalan with a friend after work. Said she was tired of me always wanting to stay in on the weekends, not letting her have any fun. I asked her what friend, a guy friend? She said, so what if it was? I don't get her. Why is she acting like this? I have done everything I can for her and now she is treating me like I don't even matter. Doesn't she understand the only reason I don't want to go out anymore is because I want to protect her? To be alone with her? Because I love her? She refused to discuss things any further. Went to bed without me. That's what she does when she wants to end a discussion. She just goes to bed. Ignores me if I follow her and keep talking. I don't know what to do. I followed her to work today. I know she only went in on a Sunday to avoid me. I sat in my car across the street from the coffee shop all damn day. Nicole seemed so casual, bright, and carefree. I could tell she wasn't even thinking about her fight last night. When her manager came out around lunchtime, she was all smiles. He was leaning over her shoulder as she was writing something behind the register. He was way too close and she seemed so comfortable with it. That settles it. I know she's fucking him. Day 21, Monday. I didn't go to my appointment with Dr. Chen today. She never calls if I don't show up. It's like it doesn't make a difference. I don't know why I'm still even writing this journal, but weirdly it does seem to help clear my mind. I can get things straight when I write them down. I feel like my brain is full of static right now. After seeing Nicole cozying up to that guy yesterday, I decided to follow her after work in my car. The coffee shop closed at the usual time, and sure enough, she left with him. They got a cab to the bar Nicole had mentioned the other night, Catalan. It looked like a cheap tapas and beers place. A lot of tacky red lights around the entrance. I didn't follow them inside. Just sat in my car and stared at those bright red lights. Even through the glass of my car windows, I felt as though I could almost hear, even feel the buzzing of the electrical fuses inside those crimson bulbs. The vivid, constant brilliance of those red lights seared into my mind, mocking me with the knowledge that just past their glow was the woman I loved, and another man, doing God knows what in that tacky low-rent bar. I could feel my heart thumping in my chest, my breathing becoming raspy. I gripped the steering wheel so tight my knuckles went white. The buzz of the electric light was drowned out now as I could hear my pulse bounding in my inner ears. I was aware of all these things clearly enough to consciously take note of them in my mind, but didn't seem able to snap out of it. I felt sick with anger, jealousy, betrayal. I wanted to know how she could do this, what I had done to deserve this kind of treatment. But at the same time, I didn't care to hear any explanation, any empty apologies. I wanted her to know how much she was hurting me. I don't remember much after that. I think I must have driven back to Nicole's apartment and slept on the couch. That is where I woke up. After a quick glance into the still, dark bedroom, I saw that she had come home and gone to bed without me again. It was then that I realized I wasn't wearing the same jeans and shirt I had on yesterday. I had changed at some point last night. I also had a headache, and my mouth tasted gross. I couldn't remember what I'd done when I got back to the apartment. Checking the kitchen, though, sure enough, there was an almost empty bottle of Jameson's on the counter, and in the washing machine were my clothes from the previous night, still wet from washing. I then had a terrible thought. Had I been so jealous of what I'd seen last night that I decided to go out myself, get drunk, and cheat on Nicole? I remember a while back when I cheated on this girl I'd been dating. We hadn't had anything special, but I still wanted to avoid the drama of getting caught. So I'd washed all my clothes from the previous night before she came over to guarantee there would be no lipstick marks or telltale smells of perfume on my clothes from the other chick. I went to the bathroom to take a piss and brush the rank taste of the night before out of my mouth. I glanced into the mirror over the sink and noticed a few red marks on my cheek and neck. Oh fuck. I must have hooked up with some chick. I have entirely no memory of who, though. The marks were a bright crimson red, a color way too slutty to be Nicole's lipstick. They reminded me of the glow of the red lights outside Bar Catalan. My whole mind seemed to be filled with red right now. It hurts my head. I'm pretty sure Nicole figured out what I did last night, and that is why she's ignoring me. Oh, fuck. Day 22, Tuesday. Jace called me this morning and insisted I come out and meet him. I didn't want to, but Nicole still isn't speaking to me. She is just lying in bed and wouldn't even respond when I tried to talk to her. Her little grotesque figurine isn't on the dresser where it normally is. She must have taken it to bed with her to talk about what I did. I think she is really upset with me. If she has figured out that I cheated on her, I'm not surprised. How could I have been such a moron? Anyway, I couldn't stand sitting in the apartment in silence. TV hurts my head, and I can't concentrate enough to make a start on any of the huge pile of neglected college work I've left, sitting on a coffee table. So I met up with Jace. None of our other friends were there, which I was kind of grateful about. Jace kept giving me weird, freaky looks out of the corner of his eye, like he expected me to burst into flames or something. He seemed totally on edge around me. I don't get it. I tried to explain a little about what was going on, but he didn't seem to follow any of what I was telling him, even though I'm sure I was explaining it as clearly as possible. It was like we were talking in different languages. After a couple of hours, he said he had to get back to his dorm. He had an assignment to do, but insisted that if I needed to talk again, I just had to text or call. Sure, Jace, I'll call if I need to talk to someone who will just give me creeped out looks and hardly respond. Thanks a lot. Now, here is where I feel the need to jump in and again provide a little dose of reality. I remember that day with Pat as clear as crystal. I should, too, as it was the last time he and I spent any time together. I did not think I was acting strangely toward him, and if I was, I am sincerely sorry that I made him feel he couldn't talk to me. But you need to understand, he was rambling gibberish. Most of what he said was just broken sentences, paranoia and resentment leaking through between the nonsense. He was jumpy, and that made me jumpy. He wouldn't maintain eye contact, and when I was talking to him, he'd appear to be listening, then suddenly whirl around to stare behind him, and he'd realize he'd actually been totally ignoring you, listening out for something. Eventually, I couldn't take it anymore. I made my excuse and left. I really meant it when I told him to call or text, though. Of course, he never did. Day 23, Wednesday. I'm starting to feel like this journal is the only place I can talk about what is going on in my life. I don't feel safe talking to anyone. Not my friends, not Dr. Chen. I've decided not to return to my sessions with her. It was after I started that so-called counseling that all of this shit started to happen. She hasn't been in touch since I stopped attending either, and I realize I don't even have a phone number for her. Whatever. Nicole still won't say a damn word to me. I think she is depressed. She hasn't got out of bed the whole time I've been here. I went out for a walk earlier to try and clear my mind. Just a brief one though, as the streets around here seem kind of shadier than normal to me. She must have gotten up while I was out and then gone back to bed. I feel so alone, and yet somehow watched. The shadows in the apartment seem darker than is natural. I have begun to dread sunset. Daylight seems to be my only friend. As soon as night comes and I have to rely on electric light, I am tortured by the buzzing of the fuses, and I swear the lights dim and flicker as and when they choose. It creates more shadows than is necessary, and not just in shades of gray. As I sit here and write this, I'm convinced that just out of the corner of my eye, there's a darkness that is much too dark, blacker than anything found in nature, the kind of pitch that comes from a shadow concealing something. I know that if I stare directly into it, my eyes will eventually focus, revealing nothing. But for some reason, I cannot force myself to turn and look. My spine is frozen, because if I do turn, I will have shown fear. And whatever is watching me, whatever it is, will know I am scared. Day 25, Friday. It has started watching me during the day now. I can't even sleep on the couch with the blinds drawn and sunlight pouring into the living room. I am still watched. Nicole acts as though I don't exist, just lying in bed, not responding to anything I say. I pace her apartment, trying to relieve some of the frustration and anxiety I'm beginning to feel crushed beneath. The guilt, the confusion, the fear. I know she knows what I did, and I know she told that fucking grotesque creature. I don't know where it is. It is still missing from its spot on the dresser. I can see most of the bedside table from the bedroom door, even in the half light, and it isn't there either. I'm beginning to feel convinced that it is the presence I can sense watching me, following me with its dreadful, beady eyes. I can see, or perhaps feel, the outline of its hideous, deformed features in the shadows, in the corners of every room. Its bony, contorted form disappearing just behind a turn in the corridor, or evaporating from view in the crack of a door left ajar. Always there, always gone as soon as I get it within my line of sight. And although the figurine has only ever been a few inches high, I swear it is growing, feeding on my fear. I can smell it too. This foul odor has begun to gradually taint the whole apartment. It is trying to drive me insane with anxiety and exhaustion. It is punishing me for hurting Nicole. Day 26, Saturday. I cried today. Cried the agonized, hysterical tears of despair. Nicole will not talk to me, but I cannot bring myself to approach her in bed, to demand a response, to shake her violently until she looks at me. I am too ashamed, too crippled with my own self-loathing that I am the one who, through my own selfish actions, pushed her into a depression so deep she cannot move from her bed. I still have not slept. I barely close my eyes for more than a fraction of a second. I can't afford to let my guard down. It is getting closer. The grotesque has grown overnight. Yesterday it was a flicker, a silhouette, never taller than the natural extended shadow of the figurine. It would sneak behind corners and watch me with its empty black eyes, its rancid sweet stink wafting in and filling my nostrils, burning my throat. Today its smell is filling the apartment, but I did not see it all day. I stayed in the sunlight, the rays warming my skin and banishing excess shadows, but not calming me. I haven't eaten in several days. Haven't been able to eat. It is making me weak. While in the comparative safety of the sunlight, I went into the kitchen and tried to eat a sandwich. It tasted hardly of anything. Swallowing was difficult. The muscles in my throat didn't seem to want to cooperate. After gulping down a glass of water to try and flush the food into my stomach, I was overcome with nausea. I sprinted to the bathroom and dropped to my knees, hugging the cold porcelain bowl. The rough chunks of my only meal for 3 days forcing their way back up my gullet. The water I drank still cold as it flooded my mouth and splashed into the toilet. After spitting a couple of times and clearing my throat, I got shakily back to my feet. I turned on the cold water in the sink and washed my face. As I straightened up and looked into the bathroom mirror, I felt my heart lurch in my chest. I blinked and it was gone, but there was no denying that for a sliver of a fraction of a second, there was the figure of the grotesque behind me, just outside the bathroom door. Its crooked form stood taller than any human now, long limbs and pallid body crouching almost double under the confines of my apartment ceiling. Its low-slung jaw gaping wide, revealing the vicious jagged teeth of no earthly creature. Its cavernous mouth, like a black hole into oblivion waiting to swallow all living things. It seemed almost eyeless, only two slightly shining points in its huge, warped, waxy head, no iris or pupils to follow. But there was no question that it was staring directly at me. Before my brain could comprehend the instinctive terror of the prey searing through my body, like shards of ice piecing outward from my heart, it was gone again. I stood there motionless, breathless, for what seemed like an eternity before I had the courage to peer, trembling, into the corridor to see nothing. The smell of it is overpowering now. I could hardly breathe, but I still tried to beg for forgiveness from Nicole, in the hope that she would call the thing off. I approached her bedside. It was so dark. I reached my hand out to hold hers. All I felt was the cold, moist skin of the grotesque under my fingers, and I ran from the room feeling the shadows writhe around me. I know that to try and leave would only anger the thing more. Oh, please, God, help me. Protect me from the vengeance of this creature. I am so sorry for what I have done. Do not let it punish me any further. Day 26, Saturday. I concede. I am a wreck. I am broken. The grotesque has won, and rightly so. Nicole told me that she told it everything, that it would protect her. It has seen inside of me. Its hollow eyes have violated my very soul, and it has found me unworthy of her. I am doomed by my own actions. It will never let me leave. She will not leave her bed. I cannot leave this apartment. Even if someone comes to find us, I am beyond help now. That was the last entry posted in the journal. From the date on it, I could see that it was 6 days before the police eventually broke down the door to Nicole's apartment. A neighbor had complained of a foul smell seeping under the door and through the walls, and her manager at the coffee shop, who she was clearly friendly with, began asking in the building if anyone knew where she was. Eventually, someone called the police. Pat's parents were called, obviously, and they called me, I suppose, for moral support as we had been best friends, and we visited him in the hospital. The police said that upon forcing the door of the apartment, they had been hit with a wave of sickening putrid air, and they had found Pat curled up in the corner of the living room, unwashed and half-starved. Every light in the apartment switched on. He was mumbling to himself, his eyes wide and roaming around the walls, seemingly unaware of the police intrusion until they tried to help him to his feet, whereupon he began thrashing wildly, screaming, not to be punished. This had confused them at first, until they continued their sweep of the apartment and entered the bedroom, which it was obvious was the source of the horrific and overpowering smell. Swinging the door inward as a massive cloud of flies was disturbed and filled the air, landing on the walls and ceiling, forming pulsing black shadows. Approaching the bed, they saw what appeared to be a figure asleep until someone switched on the overhead light. It was the body of Nicole, at an advanced stage of decomposition, her flesh near liquefied and saturating the bedsheets. Her dark brown hair was a tangled mess spread over the pillow, swept back to reveal the obvious cause of death: blunt force trauma to the skull. The entire right side of her head caved in, with what appeared to be a small but heavy white stone figurine. She had apparently put up something of a fight as her fingernails were split from clawing at her attacker. The cream-colored wallpaper was stained a brownish red, with huge splatter marks of now crumbling congealed blood. She had obviously been struck several times with the ornament. Pat was immediately arrested and taken directly to the hospital. I felt utterly useless sitting in the uncomfortable plastic chair under the fluorescent hospital lighting, looking at the figure strapped to the bed. I didn't recognize him. I could hardly understand a word he said. I picked out red and grotesque, that's about it. I wasn't going to be any help to his parents or the police. I told them everything I could, but I don't think it amounted to much. Someone had tried to find contact details of the Dr. Chen I informed them Pat was seeing, but there was no listed phone number, and nobody could find any records of a counselor or therapist locally under that name. She seemed to have disappeared, if she ever existed in the first place. Since nobody else ever saw her, it now seems entirely possible she was just a figment of what was turning out to be Pat's very fractured mind. As far as anyone could tell, Pat had gone insane with jealousy, bludgeoned Nicole to death that night after she got home from the bar. Whether he was already drunk when he killed her, that was up for debate. But he had certainly gotten drunk and, either before or afterward, proceeded to wash his bloodstained clothes and cut off all contact with the outside world, convincing himself she was just sleeping. Even now, he didn't seem to be aware of what he had done, concerned more about being punished or pursued by some creature. Initially, police and doctors had assumed his impassioned pleas not to be punished were directed at the authorities in relation to his crime. It is only now that I began to hear them echoing in my head in an entirely different context. The press obviously got wind of the bizarre nature of the incident, and by the second night, Pat was under observation. There were a couple of reporters loitering in the hospital lobby. I had ducked by them pretty quickly, but glancing back saw that Pat's parents weren't as quick and had been cornered. I felt a painful lump in my throat as I saw their faces, twisted in confusion and grief, as they were bombarded with questions. I began to walk back to try and offer some kind of distraction to the reporters, so that perhaps Pat's mother and father could slip away unnoticed. "Is it true he smashed her head in with a gargoyle?" cruelly demanded one of the reporters, pushing forward a recorder. "No," I interrupted before Pat's father had a chance to tell the reporter to fuck off, or even take a deserving swipe at the man's head. I think it's called a grotesque. To my knowledge, the object is still sitting in an evidence locker somewhere. Though I know it had no power in itself, I can't help but take some comfort in the knowledge that it is locked away forever.
Thanks for listening to Demon Creep Podcast. Don't forget to support the podcast by following it. The best things you can do is head over to my YouTube channel, Demon Creep, and drop me a subscription and a couple of views. Sharing my podcast or YouTube channel with your friends is a great help. Remember, growing is easier when you do it together. Until next time, this is Demon Creep, signing off.